Hi, this is John Griffin from Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and you are listening to the Pro Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome in to another edition of the Pro Hockey News Podcast, brought to you by MyCustomSportsChair.com. PHN15 is the code to get your Richard Cote-faced custom sports chair. Adam Minick, along with Lonnie Goldsmith and producer extraordinaire, the double shifter himself, Richard Cote, back in Studio 1A. Now we get a side. Your left side is your good side? This is what I'm learning.
I had to set it up so you could see that we're on air.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key. The on-air sign is the only reason I know how to talk.
This is the only angle I can get that in. Gotcha. And I don't feel like moving the sign.
If the on-air isn't lit up, Adam doesn't know what we're doing here.
No, I don't. I'm a trained monkey. Haven't you guys learned that?
And then we got to take out all the question marks from the teleprompter.
Yeah. God, if this was on teleprompter, it'd make my life so much easier. I'd sound way less stupid. No, I like the new camera angle. You look better from that angle.
Thank you.
I mean, like, you got fancy button down shirts and the angles totally improved your look.
Thank you. It's like I went to work today.
haven't we all, gentlemen? All eyes in the sports world are completely on South Florida. Different parts of South Florida, literally, like very all different parts of South Florida. But you've got an ECHL series on the brink of elimination in Florida. You've got the NHL Stanley Cup final with a series now because of overtime in South Florida. You have got the NBA finals going on in South Florida, and there's some soccer story where some, I guess, guy near the end of his prime is coming to play in a 17,000 seat bandbox in South Florida.
Yeah, that pretty much sums it up.
Yeah.
There's also some politics news also happening out of South Florida.
Yeah.
I'm not getting into anything. I'm just saying the eyes of more than just the sports world are on South Florida right now.
Yeah. And there's a lot of golf people that live in Florida, and that goes kind of a story this week too. But I mean, in your lifetime, can you remember one region being such a hub of sporting news in one week over so many different sports?
No, nothing quite like this. This is insane.
It's crazy. Absolutely nuts.
And of course, as it works out, both Florida NHL and NBA teams are 8 seeds. And as it works, everybody has moved, like the entire sports media is in South Florida right now. It's not just that it involves Florida. They're all there now.
Yeah. The series definitely lined up. I mean, absolutely lined up. So there is that going.
And they're both against their Western counterpart, seed number one too.
They are. Yep. And I would argue that on the NHL side, it is is Vegas the most underrated potential favorite we've ever seen in playoff history? Like, do people realize they won the Western Conference?
The East
sucked the air out of the room.
But that's the same thing we talked about 2 weeks ago between the East and, you know, Boston being what they were and Vegas having arguably the two best offensive players in hockey in their own division. It's really easy to be good and under the radar at the same time. And I think that's what Vegas has managed to do.
And I would argue, even though it's 2-1 after last night's, as we're recording this on Friday, Verhage overtime win, the seventh overtime victory for the said Panthers. Vegas has dominated the series. They dominated a majority of last night's game. I felt.
Yeah, I mean, Florida finally found their goaltending for the series. Bobrovsky's been playing great during the playoffs, but I mean, those first two games, he was MIA.
I think the first game, the defense was god awful. I don't put game one on Bobrovsky.
Okay, I'll give you that.
They were so bad on the blue line. Their back end was terrible.
Right.
But they did get the goaltending they needed. And it's the Bobrovsky, you know, that everybody was expected. But I mean, if you're Florida, I know it's 2-1, but as a Florida fan, you can't feel comfortable because your team, Lonnie, was outplayed all three games.
Yeah. You don't feel great really you feel great that you got a win. I suppose maybe you feel good that you got a win. You feel good that Tkachuk was able to come back into the game last night after he got absolutely lit up in the first period by Kolasar. You don't feel great about the way the game's been played yet. You know what I mean? They just haven't put together a game where everything clicks in all the phases. And look, it's 2-1. They're still in it, but they were, you know, 2:30 in an empty net at the other end away from being down 3-0. And everybody in South Florida feeling really different about how this is playing out right now.
Let's talk about that Kolasar hit. Clean, right? Anybody got an argument that it wasn't clean?
No.
Not even a little bit. And it's really interesting that it happened to Tkachuk, who obviously put the hit on Eichel in game two. And Tkachuk said, he had his head down in the middle of the night, in the middle of the ice. If I'm not looking up in the middle of the ice, I expect to get hit too. And that is, he prophesized the hit.
Yeah. I mean, it was shoulder to shoulder. It was clean. Now here was what I thought was the interesting thing. The stumble. When he got up.
Oh, yeah.
He went to the quiet room. I mean, Paul Maurice, after the game, did confirm that the spotters took him off the ice. At that point, I'm thinking, how many games did they lose him for?
Well, and he did not. Not just that, he didn't even start the second period on the bench.
Correct.
It wasn't a thing where they kept him out there. He was on the bench, but just, I don't know, for presence, mind games, whatever. He was back in the room. I was as surprised as anybody that he came back out.
Yeah. I mean, it was quite the ovation when he stepped foot on that ice. That was a loud present of what was going on. Richard, you see that and literally it's not we just lost him. He'll be back. I mean, that could have ended the series right there if he doesn't pass all the quiet room tests.
Yeah, and then you're going to have Department of Player Safety probably taking a second look at all that, making sure that, yes, this was a clean hit. You're going to get, fans riled up about, how Vegas, stole the series in a dirty way. I mean, you're still getting some of that, even though, the general consensus here is, yes, that there was nothing wrong with that hit. It's the way that Tkachuk went down.
And then, of course, he scores the tying goal because why wouldn't he? But, the new Justin Williams won the game. I mean, Carter Verhaeghe, folks, don't sleep on this dude. That's multiple overtime goals this year for the guy. The guy's stepping up. You've got two clutch players, and you can make an argument for either one of them being the clutchiest.
I mean, Verhaeghe was my pick for the Stanley Cup winning goal for the Panthers. He gets it done when it matters most, just like Tkachuk, and Tkachuk's the popular pick there, but he's been so large in this postseason.
Yeah, I mean, Verhaeghe has definitely shown up. Here's the really, really interesting thing about him. When you go look down the list from the regular season, and yes, I did this, he only had two game-winning goals and not a single overtime goal in the regular season.
Wow.
Playoffs get weird, man. What can you say? It's like just it's the teams, I think you could go through history. I'm not going to, but like you go through recent history of the game, and it's not just the stars that are the reason teams win Stanley Cups. It's you do it because you've got 18 skaters night in, night out, and you get contributions 1 to 18. It is never just a top three and a top pair that get it done. It never is. Anybody who leans on that is not going to win a Stanley Cup.
Edmonton. Sorry. Go ahead.
And this is the second year in a row he's had two overtime game winners in the playoffs. So I know we're all talking about Tkachuk, and Tkachuk is great. Not taking anything away from him. But let's not sleep on Verhaeghe's importance in these playoffs and how he has been a scoring threat and clutch goals throughout them. I mean, three overtime goals for Tkachuk, a couple game tying goals, not taking anything away from him. But Verhaeghe's been just as clutch as Tkachuk.
Absolutely. He's been great. And I mean, he's coming off a 42 goal season. I mean,
yeah,
he has almost as many goals this season as he had in his, I mean, he had as many goals this season as he did in the last two regular seasons combined. Almost as many as he had in his career before this year. He's been unbelievably clutch. And I mean, at 27 years old, just getting into his prime where he's going to make himself, he still has plenty of time to make himself a lot of money in his career.
Yeah. He's got one more contract coming next year. Is he's got two more seasons and then it's his UFA. So you start to wonder when that negotiation happens, but definitely a big game for Florida. And so much of that puck, folks, it's going to go somewhere in the Hall of Fame, at least of the Florida Panthers. You got to remember, that's the first ever franchise Stanley Cup final victory for the Panthers.
Yeah. Yep.
Broke a 10 game losing streak.
Yep. Yeah. So, cause they've been sweep city.
Yes, they have. Yeah. I mean, here's the other thing, you know, we talk about Verhaeghe. He is one of the couple players, I don't remember exactly how many, on this Florida team who have their name on a Stanley Cup.
Ooh. Ooh. Does he?
The 1920 Tampa Bay Lightning.
That snuck by me there.
Uh-huh. I mean, look, he's you know, not a big point getter until, you know, in the playoffs. The last couple of years, obviously, you know, last year and this year have been huge. He only had 2 points in eight playoff games with Tampa in as a rookie, but he does have himself a Stanley Cup ring and has been there and was around one of the better teams of the modern era. So this is a guy who, again, just sort of understands the work ethic that it takes to win. Those Tampa teams were really good.
Lonnie, obviously. You were right. Two players are on that roster. Eric Staal with the Hurricanes, 2006.
Yep.
That's right.
Yeah, and he did get in three of the games versus Dallas in the Tampa Cup final there in 2020. So that he did, averaging, you know, 7-7-12 of ice time. So, you know, bottom six guy, you know, sure, kind of a fourth line guy, but definitely not a fourth line guy anymore. Talk about a guy that's found a home there in South Florida instead of West Central Florida. What a difference a few hours makes, yep, driving down the old highway there. So, you know, we kind of look ahead. I think something to keep the eye on is Tkachuk's shoulder. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but when he was on the bench, the trainer was looking at his shoulder and rubbing him up, you know, post quiet room, pre quiet room. He may have damaged his shoulder a bit, on that hit. So that, I think that's something to keep an eye on. And with an off day today, you know, a lot of stim treatment and all that, but things like that tighten up and it's hard to loosen them after a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're entering the time of year. Again, I'm just full of cliches today. Nobody's at 100%. Everybody's a little banged up at this point in the season, right? And obviously, a guy like Tkachuk, guy who throws his body around more than most, is going to feel it a little bit more still.
Yeah. Yep. Hits 32 hits in the game last night. So, you know, kind of what we see. I still think Florida's big defensemen are dictating the pace and dictating the physicality. I'm coming off my prediction of seven games. I really don't think this goes the distance. I mean, I think Vegas could finish this one up in short order. Florida wins, but has no control of the game, probably gets outplayed. You know, I think they need, if they're going to really, truly get back in the series, I don't think it's just about winning game four. I think they've got to dominate. They've got to scare Vegas a bit. I don't think Vegas is scared at all.
I don't think so either. And I think that Vegas has sort of learned the lesson that Toronto and Carolina maybe, the Carolina series was really coin flips all the way. I'll say the lesson that Toronto didn't learn from Florida beating Boston. It's, you know, you've got to know how to play these guys. And I think Vegas is doing that. They're playing their game. They're not, you know, Tkachuk is he's a great pest. He is great at baiting, and they're not taking it. They're just built, even with questionable goaltending in Vegas, they're just built differently enough that they can dictate the game and not get sucked into Florida style of play.
Another guy to keep an eye on, Brandon Montour, who missed some time in the third period last night. If he's not able to go, let's just end Florida's season.
I mean, Florida's they've got depth issues.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You don't replace a Montour. You don't. No. I don't care how deep you are. There's nobody that can step up and grab 25 minutes of ice time in the way he plays and what he brings to that team.
What might be helpful is if, you know, Florida got something, anything out of, you know, Sam Reinhart or Sam Bennett. Their two centers have been, I mean, those guys have been, you know, Lundell, all three of the, you know, those centers have been very lacking after Verhaeghe. Like, that's been it. It's been Verhaeghe and Tkachuk that have kept them, they kept this close. And, you know, yeah, if Montour is out, right, you just don't. He played 25-37 last night, played also, I mean, 8.5 minutes on the power play. Yeah. But he'll play shorthanded too. He'll do it all. And you're right, you just don't replace that. It's not the thing where you kind of put in your seventh defenseman and then spread some of those minutes around everybody else. It just doesn't work that way.
Well, and let's talk about that. You mentioned the special teams, and I think Florida's got to fix this in a freaking hurry. They took 8 penalties last night, resulting in 6 power plays. 2 of those times it ends up in the back of the net. So not a bad clip there. 2 out of 6 for the Golden Knights. Panthers 0-5. So the Vegas special team last night is not going to be talked a lot about in the loss, but both their goals come on the power play and a perfect 5-for-5 on the kill. Florida can't keep doing that. You just can't.
And like, I know this was something that, that the TNT crew made a really, really important point of talking about in the first intermission, was that Florida was about to go on the power play in the first period in a, they were up 1-0 and about to go on the power play. When Carrier boarded Gudas comes back and cross checks him stupidly. They both go. Duclair immediately in a 4-on-4, a very good trip call. Like, that was a solid penalty call. And then 32 seconds later, I believe, Stone with absolutely sick redirect ties the game. So Florida goes from should have a power play to tied 1-1 in a minute because of ill discipline. It's not just the power play. It's just about fixing themselves. Don't get sucked into stupid stuff. You can't right now. Not down 0-2, and frankly, not even down 2-1. Like, you've got to find your game and not get sucked in.
And I'll be honest, in terms of the officiating, I thought this was the worst officiated game of the three. That some of the calls, it was called a lot tighter or ticky-tack. I don't know what word we want to use, but I didn't love all the penalties called. I thought it was a little, I didn't love it. I just didn't love it compared to the way the first two games went in the series in the referee department.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is because of the physical play. I think it's definitely a tough series to call. There's a level of physicality that makes it really difficult. And, you know, I think all you want is both certainly as a player, but also as a fan, just an even series.
Yeah.
Just consistency. And look, I get the crews are different every night. I get it. Different guys are going to see things differently, but just a level of consistency, I don't think is too much to ask for.
Yeah. I thought it was an interesting thing. You know, the guy that could have been a goat last night, but thank God for the special team prowess there, carry 3 penalties in a row for his team. You know, the guy had 6 minutes in the box, you know, for the early part of the second period last night. He's 6 minutes on the box, 8 minutes on the ice for him last night.
That is a excellent way to find yourself watching from the booth.
Yeah. Do you think they make a change? I mean,
I don't know. Think
they make a change? Mean,
again, like you said, 8 on the ice and 6 in the box. It's a good way to not be playing. And they're not particularly good penalties that he took.
Either. No.
I mean, that's why it's a situation where, you know, it's 2-1. If you need to mix things up a little bit to freshen it up, to wake the team up, whatever, you know, call it whatever you will. That's an easy place to start. I'm not sure if you make a move, but it wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, he's averaging 9.51 of ice time per game. So they didn't bench him afterwards. He still played his 8. He, you know, out of the 6 minutes that he lost, he only lost about a minute and a half of, so maybe 2 shifts.
Yeah.
Out of the 3.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of those of, yeah. I mean, only one guy on the team in Keegan Kolesar has less ice time per average than he does.
Right.
And he has only played in 16 of the 20 games. So you may see, who do they rotate? I mean, I get, you know, Teddy Bluger, I know, has rotated around that before. I mean, Phil Kessel is still on this team, but we're not going to see that.
I was going to say, rumor has it.
You know, Amadio, I guess, there's not a lot. I mean, there's not a lot to rotate in and through. I guess that's the thing. But also, you're talking about a fourth line winger. So I could see them making a change simply for the fact of you can't spend 6 minutes in the box as a fourth line winger and expect to make a difference.
Right. Right. You know, and it's not like it necessarily gives him, it's not necessarily, he doesn't necessarily get more ice time in the game because, again, fourth line winger late, you know, as it gets, you know, if it's tight late, the fourth line is usually the one that gets squeezed out anyway. But it's not the ice time on the ice. It's the time in the box, and it's that you put your team in bad spots.
And what's interesting, he didn't draw in until the final game of the Winnipeg series, and he's been in the lineup ever since. So it took him a bit to get in, but he hasn't left. So now the question is, because there's a loss, and this is the NHL, and when you lose, something has to change. Does the fourth line winger who took 6 PIMs become the change?
It's an easy enough scapegoat if you're looking for one.
Yeah.
And again, I don't necessarily know if you're looking for one yet.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't, you know, maybe not the worst thing in the world if you were.
Yeah. They are, like I said, I am fully ingrained that they are going to make my prediction look terrible in terms of a long series. Cause I just, like I said, even with the loss last night, I'm still impressed the way Vegas is controlling the series.
But yeah, you can't count Florida out. I mean, just look back at that first Boston series.
I agree, but I didn't feel Boston dominated like the way or controlled the games the way Vegas is controlling the games.
No, those first two games from Vegas were something completely different. But I mean, this Florida showed in game three that they can play them close. And when they do play them close, you know, they can get the bounces they need like they did in overtime.
Yep. So, yeah, so we've got, you know, we were pretty split as a group here, with 3 of us going for Vegas and 2 of us, thinking Florida. Lou and Lonnie, the Florida guys. Lonnie, Florida in 6.
Yep.
How you feeling about that?
Well, I feel good because it's still possible. I don't feel great because of how the games have gone. But it's still on the cards. Not out of it yet.
Fair. I had 7 along with Richard. Richard, mm-hmm. How are you feeling about the 7 game situation right now? About as uncomfortable as me.
Can we count if they go to like 4 or 5 overtimes? Count that as like multiple games?
Oh, is that how you did you get to 7 games based on the 7 overtimes you think we're going to see in the series?
Yeah, the way we were talking about it, and I guess that didn't get relayed to you guys. Not how many overtime periods, but how many games are going to overtime.
Oh, I put how many overtime periods. Yeah, I thought that's it was what I put too. Overtime periods.
That's what I thought too.
You thought every game was going to go to overtime, or are you just trying to be funny?
Oh, I was trying to be funny because I'm so far ahead in the second line. I decided to just go for it.
How are you doing? Hey,
you didn't listen to the end of last week's episode, did you?
I listened to like three quarters of it, and then I got sidetracked and I never came back to it. I will fully admit I got to everything but the picks. And I wasn't there to talk about my amazing picks, so I listened to that segment.
That's fair. That's fair.
I mean, when you're as good as me this year, you don't care about other people. I mean, like 20 games over 500 or something like that this year. Let's just call it what it is. I'm good. Good. Some other off the ice news around the NHL. I'm going to go way off the ice, and this is kind of the business sense of it, but we are seeing the Diamond Sports bankruptcy fallout happening in real time with more issues, I think, than people anticipated. The LA Kings announced, well, Alex Faust announced, who now is the former LA Kings play-by-play guy on TV, who followed Bob Miller, that his contract's not being renewed. And part of the reason is the LA Kings don't have a home next year for TV. Mm. The contract is up with Diamond Sports, who owns Bally's. Everybody knows about the bankruptcy, or should know about the bankruptcy going on there. So they don't know where they're going to have it. So they just decided to not bring him back. I don't know if it's at this time or permanent. Interesting that he put it out on Twitter as he did. The Bally's Sports, the Diamond Sports issue has reared its head in St. Louis. Darren Pang's contract was about to be up at the end of the month, who's also on TNT, who I believe is about to become the number one guy on TNT after Keith Jones departs, because Pang's number two right now. He's leaving St. Louis, where he's been for 14 years, to go to the only team he ever played for in his few seasons, and he's going to be the Chicago Blackhawks color analyst on NBC Sports Chicago. That's just two so far that we know of the 12 teams that are dealing with that, you know, that have a Bally Sports tie-in. This is, we've already seen it in baseball with the Padres. Mm-hmm. Like they are going to some interesting TV choice. Like they're basically MLB stepping in and taking them over as of this week. Cleveland and Texas in the MLB didn't get payments. They were almost there, but now Diamond's paying for them. This is a disruptor, guys. When you've got broadcasters, you know, right around the Stanley Cup, moving around or not getting renewed because there's no place, or because Darren Pang's case, apparently, according to Rutherford of the Athletic, they couldn't negotiate with him because they didn't know the landscape of their finances.
Wow.
And he didn't want to wait around and kind of saw an opening to go quote unquote home, you know, where he still has ties in Chicago, and there he goes. I mean, it is big time.
Yikes.
Yeah. I mean, this affects the Twins as well as the Wild and the Timberwolves up here. It's, I mean, obviously it's baseball season, so that's the bigger talking point. And the Twins have it a little bit easier because their contract ended at this season anyway. So, but for those teams that don't, it's obvious, it's just a nightmare situation, and it's putting a lot of good play-by-play and analysts sort of as free agents.
Yeah. I mean, and it's going to be really, people are going to learn about the hiring practices, because what people don't realize is some of the broadcasters are hired and paid for by the teams. Some of them are hired and paid for by the network. Mm-hmm. And it differs from market to market. And sometimes within the market, like I believe in Dallas, where Bally's pays the Mavs, but I believe the Stars are hired and paid for by, you know, paid for their broadcasters. And they essentially buy the airtime, you know, different models. And this is going to be far arching in a time when the national media is great for the NHL and north and south of the border. North, they're about to renegotiate and make oodles of money there in the short term, in the long term. And then here in the States, you know, on the southern border there, if you will, of hockey, is ESPN and Warner Brothers, Turner, everything's great there for the long-term deal. And really, TNT is doing a bang up job in their first ever. I mean, talk about Turner getting their first ever sports final championship. They're doing a bang up job so far. And I will say this: I think they have finally found a way for Bissonnette to be valuable without being too much. I think they've hit their stride in that studio.
Absolutely. They've been great. It's been, they've been a lot of fun. Liam McHugh is a, I mean, and I think we learned this on when he was with NBC, he's a great traffic cop.
Well, he's got talent, but now he's finally dealing with talent.
Right.
He had some boneheads before.
He had some absolute dopes before. And you know, he had Carter, you know, Anson was with him at NBC, but yep. Anson always had to play second fiddle. Like he was the part of the B team. And which was terrible because he was arguably the, you know, most talented, most knowledgeable of the people that Liam had to deal with. But now he can play traffic cop and get out of the way. He doesn't have to carry it because he has really good, like Lundquist is fantastic.
Oh, and that Gritty. Suit last night. How about that suit last night?
God, he wear the hell out of a suit. Yeah. It's just, they've done such a good job. They've really, I was worried. I mean, admittedly, was worried about not just Bizanap, but like you just the idea of a fully cable final, like you get worried about something that like that. But I think they've been, I think the ratings in the first couple of games have borne it out, and just the quality that they bring to the pregame, the postgame, and the in-between stuff has been fantastic.
Anson Carter does surprise me. I mean, with such a poor college education, that he's able to articulate things and actually bring value to a conversation.
I interviewed him a number of times when he was in college, and he was all, I mean, this is not new. I mean, I'm sure he's gone through some media training, but like he was always real knowledgeable about the game.
Yeah. So you're saying his education didn't deter the smarts that he already had. That's what you're saying.
Didn't deter mine either. So it's fine.
What did you have coming in that's been augmented, though?
I had enough. Just, but enough.
People don't get the inside joke. Lonnie went to Michigan State, and that's where Anson Carter went. Did Anson graduate from Michigan State? I know you actually graduated with a piece of paper and all that pizzazz.
I believe he did.
I thought he'd, yeah.
I believe he did. He was always a great interview. He was always a really... is bright, insightful. You could like ask in-depth questions about the game, and he was always willing to answer it. And so it's fun watching it play out on this stage.
Yep. It's, you know, great turf management school, well known for their turf management, even though they had turf at their football stadium for how long. I always thought that was the oddest thing, of well known for their turf management school, but they didn't do their own.
You and me both.
More off the ice news, Richard, right up your alley, because, you know, a guy going from a team with terrible jerseys to some good looking jerseys, Shane Doan leaving Arizona, and he will go work with, Brad Treliving, and he's going to be a special advisor to the general manager.
Yeah. I was curious to get your thoughts on this, because when I saw, I mean, obviously you recognize the name Shane Doan from his years in Arizona / Phoenix Coyotes. You know, legend there. He spent one season in the front office in Arizona, gets brought up by Treliving to Toronto after he gets hired as the GM. I just can't gauge this move, or at least what he's going to be doing in the front office in Toronto.
So what I'm looking at it, very similar to Jason Spezza for Kyle Dubas. We didn't know exactly what Spezza was going to do, but he came off the ice right away and had a role there. And what you got to remember, there's a tie here, because Brad Treliving, after he left running the Central Hockey League, he went to be the AGM of Arizona.
Right.
While Doan was playing there.
Right.
So there's an overlap. I think it's about 6-7 years. So he knows him as a player. And I think this is one of those things of players that come off the ice, a fresh view, things like that, because Stone's not very far removed from playing. And this is, I think that's what it is. It's like a step. Doan's obviously wanted to get in the front office. Obviously things weren't going Arizona. Somebody he knows well from his playing days reached out to him. And I think it's hard to say no when the Toronto Maple Leafs are involved.
I guess so. But I mean, mostly the Treliving situation, and you know, him stepping in as GM after we saw the messy departure with their former GM. I don't know, like, I know he has experience in Calgary and putting together the roster they have there. Just like what do you think he is going to be adding to the Maple Leafs that they weren't getting previously?
I think he plays that Spezza role, Lonnie, the guy that very recently was on the ice and still has some connections.
No, sorry. I'm talking about Tree Living.
Tree
Living? Yeah.
You know, I like Brad as a person, man. I've talked numerous times to Brad, you know, when I was in the Central Hockey League with the Scorpions and he was our league president commissioner. So I mean, numerous times met him and meals with him and talked to him. Great guy. I was confused. I don't know. I don't know if it's an upgrade from Dubas. I wasn't big on the trade that he clearly lost. I mean, Calgary lost in the Kachuk trade. And some people, it was an incomplete game. We're done with the incomplete game. It's Florida wins. Florida wins that trade, and there's nothing that will change that. I thought he should have gotten a little more than what he got. I think Toronto is always going to hire somebody that knows Canadians and knows the Canadian marketplace and Canadian media partners and things like that. I think it's very hard for them to not do that being where they are. And I think they needed a name with experience.
Fair enough.
And not super expensive. Lonnie, I mean, there's a lot of money invested in Shanahan and some other pieces there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll see. He's got, there's going to be some decisions to be made this summer. And, you know, we'll see. I do wonder how his unavailability at the draft table will impact some of the moves that need to happen and may happen around the draft. Probably not very much because I'm sure he's not working, but like, right, he's working. Yeah. I don't know. I think the whole move perplexes me, but I'm not sure but it's Toronto. They don't do the conventional.
And what Doan brings is, you got to remember, he was the AGM at the last World Hockey Championships that Canada just won gold at. I believe he was GM when they were last Olympics in Beijing. I think he was Hockey Canada's GM for that team. And I know he's been involved in the Spengler Cup and other World Junior Championships. So Doan's been around management side of international play. I think this is a big step now for him in a Canadian market for his career. And I think it's a good move by Tree Living. I do. I think Doan's one of those really solid hockey minds. Anytime he talked, anytime in his career, and he's put together some of the international teams, I think he's done a really good job.
Okay.
And don't forget, Austin Matthews grew up in Scottsdale. While Doan was, I mean, don't discount that's something.
I'm not, but I mean, we're not going to forget that.
I mean, I'm assuming there is some respect or there's numerous times that Matthews watched Doan play in person and probably, you know, may have had a Doan card or jersey or two growing up.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So I think that's part of it too. So good on Tree Living. For, I mean, it's you're seeing this a lot more of GMs with these specialists. They don't want to be in the office full time, or they don't want to live necessarily, you know, on the hockey rink and all that. But they're special assistants or advisors who are very connected to the game. So I'm good with it.
All right. Yeah. I guess I've never seen a name like that, or at least maybe I just haven't paid attention enough to front office, you know, hirings and firings to see like big names like this just come on to a role that's not like the assistant general manager or the general manager.
Now we've seen a lot. Cause I think Spezza was a special assistant for Dubas. I don't think he was an official AGM. We've seen it a few. There's been,
I'm sure it's happened, but like, you know, yeah, I usually see the ones that are like, oh, hey, that's a surprise that they decided to bring them in and like that position in the front office.
Once again, it's Toronto, so everybody's going to write about it.
Yeah.
It gets the extra bill. Another thing off the ice, this guy happened today, guys. The New Jersey Devils signed Damon Severson and promptly traded him to Columbus. It was a sign and trade. 8 years, $50 million contract, so $625 through the 30-31 season per year. He could have become an unrestricted free agent. This is a week after they get another defenseman. Columbus going big on the blue line, boys.
They need to go big somewhere.
That it's Adam and I, Adam, you and I talked about this earlier this week. It is so bizarre to me that big moves like this are happening in the middle of the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yes.
Sorry, Stanley Cup Final.
Singular. Yes. Yes. NBA Finals.
Right. Singular final. Yeah. I don't understand at all how this happens. But that said, interesting move by Columbus getting a jump on free agency. Definitely, you know, blue line, a need, clearly. And it's, you know, again, just seeing the jump that they're getting is really, really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Severson and Provorov. So, you know, $10 million plus of new defensemen acquired during the Stanley Cup Finals. Jarmo Kekalainen and not really watching the games. Not watching the games, apparently. Just worrying about his team on the ice next year. Good for him.
Good what for he should him. Be doing.
Yeah, exactly. Third round pick goes the other way. And by the way, from 23 to 27, a full no trade clause. 27, 28, a 20-team no trade list. And then from 28 to 31 in those twilight years for the 28-year-old, yes, he's 28 and just signed an 8-year deal, down to a 12-team no trade list. So more than half the league he could be traded to. But basically, he's going to anchor their blue line, you know, starting at 28 all the way to 36.
I mean, I would argue, Werenski is anchoring the blue line, but Werenski Severson is your top pair.
Assuming Werenski comes back healthy.
Assuming he comes back healthy. I think the plan is you go into next season with that as your top pair though.
Yeah. So yeah. Cause Severson, Werenski, I would.
God damn near $16 million of defenseman as your top pair.
Yeah, I mean, or do you break them up? I mean, you can play, you know, or Provorov and Severson can play because, I mean, you got, you know, Gudbrandsson still true. There too, who's a pretty good young. I guess he's not young anymore. 31, isn't he? He still seems young to me. I don't know why.
No, but, I mean, you got a lot of right-handed options. Yeah. You know, you go Gudbrandsson, you go Boqvist with Werenski.
You're not putting Boqvist with Werenski. He's not ready.
I said you had options. I didn't say I had to do it. I mean, I still think Severson, I think it's going to be Severson Werenski.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, load up.
Assuming Werenski's, yeah, just absolutely load him up.
So that's news from around the NHL, gentlemen. Everything is, that's about it. We've got the series, but down on the farm, you know, down between the hedges, as some people like to call it. And if you need your hedges clipped, Manscaped's the way to do it. PHN20 is the code, manscaped.com/prohockeynews. If you want to get all your twigs and berries and chests and back looking all pretty, check them out, manscaped.com/prohockeynews for your 20% discount. Going to step down to the AHL. It's old versus new, which is pretty cool, guys. You've got the oldest franchise in the history of the American Hockey League in the chocolate-loving Hershey Bears versus the upstart, new guys, supposedly great environment, smashing all financial records for a brand new team, the Coachella Valley Firebirds, who shut out Hershey the other night 5-0. Old versus new. It's kind of a fun story. And you can't get much farther apart, a little farther in the AHL, because Hershey's not the most northern or easterly team, but it's some plane rides in this one.
Definitely coast to coast here. I was just blown away by that first game last night, the 5-0. Oh man.
Beatdown?
The beatdown, right? No, these Calder Cup playoffs have been just a blast to watch. I mean, the last two series went six games. You know, Hershey took pretty good control over the Americans in the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals. I mean, yes, Milwaukee took a couple of games, but no, Coachella just seemed like they were in control of that entire series. They really haven't looked like they were in deep trouble, even against the Calgary Wranglers. You know, I didn't have a whole lot of doubt in them making it to the next round. But I did not expect a 5-0 opening game either way between these two teams. And yeah, you know, even at the NHL level, like, you know, the Seattle Kraken have to be excited that their farm team is just doing so well and the prospects that they have there for the longevity of that franchise as well.
Especially coming off the breakout season that the Kraken had. This is, I mean, it's great for them organizationally, and you know, from a marketing standpoint, it becomes a really, really good sell. Also, a family who went out to that area, went and saw a game there this season. The arena is beautiful by all accounts. The atmosphere there is fantastic. So, you know, the organization is really doing a first class job. I thought it was odd that, you know, they wouldn't try to put their team, you know, their AHL team in a market a little closer to Seattle, but the partnership with the, in the Valley there has worked out really well.
Well, but I think a lot of it had to do with the ownership groups of the team and their entertainment connections. Yeah. And I think a lot of that is what had to do with it. Honestly, okay, big thing to talk about though. Big thing to talk about. Cause this is our version. We love talking about this. What do we think of their jerseys?
Oh,
I have troubles with the blue jerseys. I like their whites. I have trouble with their blue jersey. The way they sneak in the Kraken aqua in there seems forced and unneeded and kind of ruins the jersey for me.
Yeah.
The aqua is kind of a tough color to like sneak in.
But they do. They sneak it in as the bottom stripe on the arms and right above the hem of the jersey. I mean, I don't love it. I like, it ruins the whole jersey for me.
It's like, yeah, it's a partial palette swap for the Kraken jersey. I get that. I mean, it's technically the eye of the Firebird, so it kind of goes with
which they forced in that color in the eye of the Firebird to have some connection with Seattle, and not look too much like Calgary colors. I mean, it's. And I know when something fire, you think flames and all that, but they're blue. And they're to me, their white jersey is pretty darn good. I don't like this blue jersey that they've done.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, am I looking at the right one here? I see a black and a white. I don't see the blue. I don't think I've seen the blue yet.
Looks blue to me. Is it a black? I thought it was blue that their home jersey.
Oh, maybe it is blue. It's just the, yeah, it's blue.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah, because they're like a navy
the blue. Navy blue, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I like the aqua blue in for the eye of the Firebird, but really that should be all that's there. Like that stripe does throw it off for me. About
yeah, I was watching some of the game last night and. I had seen the jerseys before, but it was really like the first time I think I paid hardcore attention. I'm like, yeah,
what I really like about this jersey is both the logo on the Navy and the shoulder patch are awesome.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Those are both fantastic. I think if you just left the turquoise as the eye, I think it's fine, or the teal, whatever you want to call it. I think the thin striping at the bottom of the jersey and the sleeves is a bit unnecessary. It doesn't really work.
Or maybe just use it to break up the red and the yellow on the sleeve.
I don't know. I mean, I think the red and the yellow sort of, the red and the orange blend, yeah. You know, just sort of blends nicely to it. I think as the eye, it's fine and you can leave it at that and be done.
Yeah.
I don't think it needs anything else.
Yeah. So we're all kind of in agreement here. And you know, this is what you come to the first line for is to talk jerseys. Let's not kid ourselves.
I save it for these episodes.
And it's hard when you're going up against a team that looks as good as the Hershey Bears always have in their jerseys. I mean, they've got some good duds. The way that they have that muted yellow that they've gone to in their jerseys and kind of had, they've had cream jerseys before and what, you know, mm-hmm. instead of white, it's a solid look. It's a solid look. When Hershey's going to wear their darks and Coachella's in their whites in this series, it's going to be a great jersey series.
Oh yeah.
You know, I think the teal on the white jersey, I think works for me more than on the
yes.
dark.
Yeah. I have the same thing with the Kraken. I think the Kraken white jerseys are better than their dark jerseys.
Yes.
I agree. I think teal's a better accent color than a dominant color.
Yeah.
And I think, but the teal as the accent on the darker jersey doesn't work for me.
Agreed. Yep. Yep. So overall, I think Hershey is your jersey winner in the AHL finals for the Calder, if we're going by jerseys, but we'll see. But yeah, it's really cool. I like the old versus new. So check that out. The AHL, AHL TV's got all of those games. So you can watch all that good stuff. And it should be good. I think that should be a fun 2-3-2 series that they have as Coachella Valley tries to become a cup winner in their first year of existence. Down on the farm again in the Kelly Cup, gentlemen. The line is in the water and the fish ain't biting. the alligators are chomping. 3-0 over the Fighting Fish of Idaho. Florida Everblades have won 1-0, 5-3, and 3-2 over the Steelheads. So two close games. One, the 5-3 game wasn't that close. But, you know, you go from some offense to a ho-hum game in game three, and Florida has two chances now to end this at home.
No, this is one I was really interested in coming into the series. Just, you know, Idaho just being so dominant in the regular season. And I mean, we've beat this story to death during playoffs in the NHL and the AHL, now in the ECHL, you know, just this entire year, I feel like it's been, you know, in our face more than anything else, but you know, the dominant team just coming to struggle in the playoffs. I mean, Idaho, they won their last series 4-1. They had a slow going in the first round.
Yeah, didn't four overtime, like the last four games in that series all went to overtime.
Yeah, and they were on the brink of elimination.
They were down 2-0 and then won four straight overtimes.
Well, yeah. I mean
that's crazy.
Utah looked like they were going to just, you know, quickly swat them out of the playoffs. But, I mean, no, they came back. They won those four straight overtime games. They won their next series 4-1 against the Americans. And then, you know, beat the Toledo Walleye, who were also an extremely hot team in the regular season. These were the two best teams in the league in the Western Conference Finals. And then you got Florida, who's now ready to dispatch the Steelheads. It's got me wondering where this dominant team, like, has the playoffs worn the Idaho Steelheads this much in the Kelly Cup finals?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's tough in the minor leagues when you have the schedules are not balanced. You know, it's definitely a travel friendly is how right. they try to do it. But I think the biggest thing is, yeah, I mean, Florida snuck into the playoffs. I mean, they were the final team in the South. I mean, they comfortably made it. There was a big gap between them and Atlanta, but I mean, they were the last seed, you know, and they weren't what Idaho was with 119 points, for God's sakes. I mean, it wasn't even, right. they wrapped up the regular season title, I think, in like January. I mean, they were just a dominant sec team.
A Florida hockey team dispatching the runaway top seed. We've seen this before.
Stop us if you've heard this before.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
History repeating.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see there. I mean, the Kelly Cup, there's a good chance the Kelly Cup will be over tonight.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we record this on Friday. You know, we may have double A done, and triple A and the show ready to finish. And we often see the Calder Cup finish after the NHL playoffs. It's been like that the last few years, just the way that the starts are, but, we're getting down to it. We basically, we're pretty close to single digits left of professional hockey games in North America this year.
Yeah.
That time of year.
Yeah.
That time of year. Hey, Father's Day is coming up, guys. Have you guys asked for any Foco bobbleheads?
I did. I don't think anyone was listening, though.
Well, talk to the next producer of the podcast a little more then. Maybe he needs to buck up a bit and, you know, get online and order you a Foco bobblehead. You can check them out online at Foco. Pretty cool stuff. Lonnie, does Father's Day even happen in a house when you have an eighth grade and high school graduation going on within weeks?
It does. This year is we get back from college orientation the day before, and then wife has some nonprofit board work happening that morning, you know, Sunday morning, and older child has to work on Sunday. So listen, I'm going to have a day. And I think my youngest is babysitting at some point. So I got a day to myself in the final round of the US Open.
This is this is the difference between Mother's Day and Father's Day, at least in a lot of people's world, is when you ask moms what they want for brunch, flowers, let's do some family thing, all that. When my family asks me, I'm like, just leave me alone. If I can get a day of nobody talking to me and I get whatever TV I want, wherever I want to eat and drink, whatever I want, sleep, when it, like, and not call my name, that would be the perfect Father's Day to me. And I've talked to other, this seems to be a common thing of the difference of Mother's Day, family time together, Father's Day, just leave me alone.
Like, I don't mind some family stuff. Like, I don't mind
your family doesn't listen. Somewhere. So you could say whatever you want about them. Don't, you don't have to pretend they don't listen to this.
That's true. No, I really don't mind. Like, I don't mind like doing something, like going out for dinner, even if it's just like, you know, local barbecue place or bringing stuff in. Like, I don't care. I'm not like that picky about it, but yeah, it's the 2 days are very different.
Richard, you're still in that young kid stage. So it's still fun, right? Cause you still get like handmade gifts and stuff.
Oh yeah, it's still a blast, but you know, mostly it's because I got my rec hockey league going on during the summer, and we usually have a game on Father's Day, so I get to go play hockey and then come back and hang out with the family. And you know, not last year, but the year before, I got my first hat trick. So on Father's Day, so ooh. I guess it's been a lot longer than that.
Pandemic. it was Father's Day for somebody, maybe not you.
No, it was. Oh man, my years are blending together. It was 2019. It was my first Father's Day is when I got that hat trick.
Checking when was the kid born? 19. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
I the softball league I used to play in here when it was in existence, we'd start the season the week before Mother's Day, often a very cold Sunday morning in Minnesota. Mother's Day would be off. So that was sort of like the exhibition game, the spring training, because we'd have the next week off for Mother's Day, because God forbid we played. Father's Day, however, was, you know, doubleheaders and let her rip because it's Father's Day.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. Parting shots, gentlemen. Producer extraordinaire, Richard Cote.
I found this interesting. And as I was putting together the rundown today, NHL did an interview with head coach Patrick Waugh, ex-NHL head coach Patrick Waugh, because he's still coaching. They just won their championship. But it was a little interesting as far as timing goes, because he's expressing his interest in still pursuing being an NHL coach. But nobody really seems interested, given how he departed here in Colorado. And just reading through the interview, it got my brain thinking. He had to have dropped this interview because there are so many coaching options available, so many positions open. He's trying to get his name out there. And you know what? Whoever wants to take a gamble on him, you know, I hope for the best. But the lessons he said he learned, I don't know if he actually learned. So, you know, I don't know. It's got me thinking just the timing of that interview and what's going to happen with him as far as you know, a head coaching NHL career for him.
Yeah, apparently the Rangers are not interested in him. They had to announce that they weren't interested in him because somebody said that they were. And you wonder, oh, maybe Patrick Roy said they were.
Oh, I'm sure, like, you know, Ratrick Poix or somebody called him up. And
it wasn't Patrick Roy. It was unnamed sources close to Patrick Roy.
Here's the one thing I've learned from that Y interview and some of the pictures associated with it. The beard's got to go. The beard does not like his three color beard doesn't bushy. It's not working for him.
Maybe he gets it a little closer. Like he can't have that mountain man beard.
Yeah.
He's not that crazy anymore. So
not working for me.
Yeah.
The playoffs just wrapped up. He's going, you know, solidarity playoff beard.
That is too well kept to just be a playoff beard. He's had it for a while.
Yeah.
He may have gotten thicker, but it doesn't work for me. Doesn't work for me. I couldn't take him serious behind an NHL bench looking like that.
Just send him the URL to Manscaped. See if he'll...
Maybe he needs a discount. Maybe he needs the PHN 20 code.
He might.
He's on a junior salary now. Because there's not a lot of money in juniors up in Canada at all from what we've learned.
Oh, no.
Small business up there. Amateur stuff.
And plus, you know, he probably couldn't drop his name and get whatever he wants.
No, no. No, but by the way, the headline on NHL.com of Blah Unmasked, like really?
Yeah.
Like whoever's the editor that put that together. Lonnie, what's up with editors and bad headlines?
First of all, I'm just going to say headlines are really difficult to write, but that was just a lazy headline.
I was going to say that wasn't a horrible headline. That was just lazy.
Lazy. Yeah.
Right. That was just, it wasn't bad. It was fine. It was lazy. It's like the first thing that could possibly, you know. First thing that possibly could come to his the editor's mind was that.
It's like a headline I would write.
Yeah.
What's that say about you?
I'm not good at headlines.
Okay.
You work in TV. I mean, I work in digital news too, though. It's all clickbait anyway. That's what you got to do. Just write the clickiest possible thing you could come up with.
And then maybe back it off a notch.
Yeah.
If you want.
Depends on the story.
Speaking of clickbait, the audio bait that you are, Lonnie Goldsmith, your parting shot.
I don't even know what that was.
Wasn't good.
I know, Adam, you had mentioned the end of middle school and the end of high school for my two kids is just a weird transition. And it's one of those weird life transitions. And, you know, put in for a bunch of vacation days this year, you know, this year, not for anything. I mean, it'll be fun, but not, you know, just a bunch of trips to Des Moines for parents weekend and move in and orientation. And it's just a weird time, you know, in my life and family's life to all of this stuff is happening right now. And it's just sort of weird to experience it. Cause I've seen friends experience it with their kids and, you know, family and stuff. And it's just different when it happens in your household.
There you go. Yep. My parting shot, I got a snarky and a serious. Okay, Canada, we get it. You haven't won the Cup since 93. Keep your smoke. Like blowing it our way and hitting our whole like Northeast Coast. But let me say this on a serious note. Richard, you know about wildfires living in New Mexico and Colorado. Mm-hmm. They happen all the time, sadly.
Oh, yes.
Have you ever seen any sort of outrage and coverage as much as now that the East Coast elites are getting hit with somebody else's smoke? Now it's a thing.
Oh, thank you for bringing this up. Yes. this it has been amazing to see. Oh, New York shrouded in wildfire smoke. How, you know, here are tips to keep yourself. I was like, okay. Yes. It's uncomfortable. Yes. You know, air quality, you should keep an eye on that. You know, don't go outside if you're sick or, you know, if you're compromised in any way. But it will pass. We know this. And, you know, air currents will change. They'll blow away. The fires will get out. Just sit tight. Do the best you can. We don't need days of coverage of wildfire smoke.
Just because it hit the Northeast. You know,
oh, yeah.
Lonnie being the middleist that he is doesn't understand any of this.
We've had... I mean, we have definitely had from wildfires in the West, wildfires in Canada. We have, you know, again, just like with New York, if the smoke hits the air in the right way, in the currents, it's going to come your way. And we've had days of, you know, the air quality index hitting 300 from the wild, not like the 489 out of 500 that New York had the other day. I mean, it was, I think somebody on Twitter pointed out that it was, the air was cleaner in Blade Runner than it was in New York last week. but it's, I mean, it's really bad. It's been really bad here. And I think, you know, this is a, I don't want to get political. This is climate change issues.
But the point of this is, yes, we know it's bad, but it's been bad in other places too. And nobody's cared until it hits New York and DC and Philly.
Absolutely.
Get over yourselves, people.
Yes.
Until get over yourselves in that part of the country.
It doesn't happen until it affects New York. You know, this.
So many things affect New York. So many things. So many things. In other news, my parting shot is irony of potentially the year here, halfway through going on in baseball, where Anthony Bass, who was a little anti-LGBTQ plus video, all that good stuff going on. Then he spoke to as an ally, trying to have a discussion. Good on him for that. He was actually going to be part of the Pride weekend and catch the ceremonial first pitch tonight. Well, he can't do that because he has since been DFA'd by the Blue Jays today. Mm-hmm. As Pride weekend begins. Sports irony of the year right there.
Yep.
Love it. Love it. For Richard Cote and Lonnie Goldsmith, this is Adam Minnick. Next time we talk to you, we're probably in postseason draft. We're probably in postseason postseason pre-draft mode on the Hockey News podcast.
It's almost time to get the whole group together.
Do we have to talk about the Canadian?
I mean, we could leave him out if we want. I don't have to send the email to him.
If Jack Eichel is the MVP next week and you record the second line edition, I'm joining that episode.
Yes.
For a segment.
I will bring you
to that right now.
It'll be March or so, but.
Can a man dream?
You can, absolutely.
Is anybody, I mean, come on, for the PHN crew, don't we want Eichel?
Oh, of course.
That was my pick.
Yeah.
Both of your picks.
Yeah. So we'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening. This has been another edition of the Pro Hockey News Podcast.